it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan and Tinky on the fan. Let's not waste any time because we are late and it is my fault. It's time for your daily Cinco de Fivo.
Cinco de Fivo with Evan and Tinky on the fan.
Cinco de Fivo is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything everywhere. Tomorrow, Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone with the carving table out. You can listen to that at noon during BT and Sal. We'll address the media. Yesterday, one of my sneakily favorite Tinky Barber moments was when he knew something that he knew, but it hit him with realization. Oh, yeah, Brian Cashman really has been the general manager for that freaking long. 1998? You know, like that. That's
a long time, man.
Tiki talked about he was in the NFL for 1 year. So then it had me really thinking last night into this morning, how many different GMs have come and gone all through all our New York teams while Brian Cashman has been here? So some of these names you're going to remember. Some of them, maybe you'll be like, oh, yeah. But these are the five GMs in New York we probably forgot were here while Brian Cashman was here.
That's an interesting
one. All right?
I like this.
Here we go.
Here we go!
Number five.
This is a name you're always going to remember, but think about this. Ernie Accorsi. Now, why do I say Ernie Accorsi? He started as general manager of the Giants the same year Brian Cashman started as general manager of the Yankees.
Oh, wow.
Started.
It's kind of funny.
That's good one, though, because how long he's not been the general manager of the Giants.
That's insane.
Right. There's been three
since
him.
Yes. And he's well remembered for his time here, and we've had three since.
It feels like Ernie, of course, he was GM an eternity ago.
Yes. Yeah. Again, this is just highlighting how long this guy has been here. All right, here we go.
Number four.
Brody Van Wagenen. I mean, we remember that time we had an agent come in to be the general manager of the Mets?
Yeah. Where I will always love Brody, and I have to give him credit, is he did two things that I think live in Met history. Number one, he extended Jacob DeGrom. Mm. Well, we got a few more years out of the guy before he left. And number two, the Edwin Diaz trade may go down as one of the great trades in the history of the franchise, and he made it.
That's a good point.
So even if he wasn't here long and it wasn't successful in terms of wins and losses, he definitely left his imprint.
He did some meaningful stuff.
Yep, here we go.
Number three.
This one I like a lot. Neil Smith. Why? Because he was the general manager of two teams in his town. All in the time of Brian Cashman here. He was finishing his run of the Rangers when Brian Cashman started, when he won the Stanley Cup with the Rangers. And then he was the GM of the Islanders for exactly 1 month in the summer of 2006.
Mm, surreal.
He talked about what a job this would be, and then he quickly found out that Charles Wong was not giving him authority to run the Islanders the way he wanted, so he was fired a month in. Nice. And then Garth Snow became the Islanders GM. So two different hockey teams he ran during Brian Cashman's time.
There are franchises I have in which they had managers, coaches, or GMs that never actually did it. Neil Smith running the Islanders, Carlos Beltran managing the Mets.
All right, here we go.
Number two.
Bill Belichick coaching the Jets.
I know, true.
Speaking of that team, Terry Bradway?
Yeah.
His entire run happened that was pre-Mike Tannenbaum, post-Bill Parcells, all the time that Brian Cashman was here.
Mm, incredible.
That was quick, too.
And here we go.
Number one.
Tiki, you familiar with Kevin Stefanski's work?
Yeah, of course.
His father was the general manager of the Nets.
Where he was going.
In the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
Between Rod Thorne runs, by the way, between them, Kevin Stefanski's dad was running a team in this town since Brian Cashman has been here.
Wow. So here's the
I don't remember that date.
Here is the game. And this one, I promise I will not put a clock on. In fact, you can come back with the answer tomorrow.
Okay.
How many combined general managers have all the other teams in this town had while Brian Cashman has run the New York Yankees? Add up the Mets GMs, the Giants GMs, the Jets GMs, the Knicks GMs, the Nets GMs.
Well, the Giants is easy. It's four.
Yeah, it's not that bad. Like, the Giants are actually the easier one.
Yeah.
But now,
because you know all the, you know all of them.
But now do the Mets and do the Jets and do the Nets and do the Knicks. That number is absurd.
Yeah.
And when you combine the list, we're going to start a clock tomorrow, and you will proceed to name every single person who ran a New York sports team.
Okay.
Now, if you want help, I'll do a few of these teams. Mm.
All right, you want to
Giants? The Giants are easy. It's Ernie Accorsi, Jerry Reese, Gettleman, and now Joe Shane.
Yeah, correct.
So that's easy.
That one's easy. That
I think
easy.
The Jets are probably easy too.
Yeah, it's not right? that bad. Terry Bradway, Mike Tannenbaum, John Idzik,
yep.
Mike McCagnan,
Joe Douglas, yeah. and whatever this
so
is
five.
Right now.
So five.
Also, Bill Parcells and Indeed. Who was the GM that year?
What was that?
Who was the GM with Parcells?
Was
Did
it
he run it?
Kind of the. I don't remember.
I don't remember who technically was then.
But okay, but that counts. It's
yeah, no, you're
Brian
right.
Cash
no, you're right. Yeah. Well, anyhow, do the... Do,
all right.
Do.
Well, you know what? After the show, we'll split up. Who wants
right,
to do what?
All right. Done.
I did my Giants out already.
Well, the Giant one's easy. They don't have a million names.
It was the easiest one.
Now, Brian Cashman is meeting the media tomorrow. He'll be talking at 12 noon. It'll be right here on The Fan with BT and Sal. You get to hear it live. What are the things you need to have addressed by Brian Cashman? Okay, number one is Anthony Volpe. We have talked about that today.
Mm-hmm.
What else are the things that need to be answered from Brian Cashman? For you, you're like, I need to hear this answer before I'm done.
I think the plan for Jason Dominguez is number one.
The plan for Jason Dominguez.
Because I think given opportunity, he could develop into a really good player.
And I think they need him to.
Yes.
Because Trent Grisham is very unlikely to be a Yankee.
And if he's going to be versatile enough to play first base or third base. We saw him taking
I bet you no one asked that question.
We saw him taking grounders before the divisional game.
I'll give you one that's very important that we should not forget about.
Mm-hmm.
I'd pepper him a little bit about Judge's health. Because Aaron Judge,
right.
we were concerned.
That's a great point.
Was going to possibly have some issues with that elbow and maybe need Tommy John surgery. So along with peppering him questions about Judge's health, I think you got to bring up first base and say, is this the moment? Is this the time at 33 years old to say, you know what? We're going to make him a first baseman.
That's interesting. But I think you also, around that regard, because Aaron Judge, when he did get hurt, has to go to DH, the Giancarlo Stanton issue, even though it's not a bad issue, it's just an issue because he doesn't necessarily play the field. But when someone like Judge gets hurt, he has to play the field.
Right.
So how are you mitigating that in the future? Because it's non-ideal to have Giancarlo Stanton playing right field for 15 or 20 games.
I would also say, and this is kind of douchey-ish, if you will, with Aaron Boone sitting on the dais, I'd say, Brian, you've said in the past that 10 years is the amount of time that really works for a manager. Does that mean Aaron only has 2 years left before you fire him? Thanks.
Wow.
I mean, it's direct.
Wow.
Brian.
But they were pretty good.
Wow. Is that not a fair question?
It's fair. I just don't know if you should ask it.
Yeah, you probably have to clean that question up.
Yeah.
You don't want to be disrespectful. I do like Aaron Boone. I think he's actually a good baseball man. I mentioned yesterday, a part of why I would move on from him has nothing to do with him being bad at his job. It has to do with time. It has to do with, I think there are, especially in modern sports, I think there's an expiration date with leaders, with coaches, with managers. Like, it runs out. Like, Tom Thibodeau did an awesome job with the New York Knicks. I can't say it enough. Time was up. Like, I thought it made sense for the Knicks to move on from him, and that doesn't mean he's an idiot or anything like that. So I think with Boone being here for 8 years, it's a fair question. What do you need to have asked, Sean?
I need serious Jason Dominguez questions asked about this.
Yes.
Was it a mistake to move him from center field to left field? Is there any thought in putting him back in center field? That, to me, is a priority number one. And priority number two, do you view any of the young guys that we've seen, as a follow-up, Dominguez, Ben Rizem, as untouchable this offseason?
They were pretty good.
Untouchable.
Okay. You know what I mean? Like, this Ben Rice has been brought up.
Right.
What are we doing here?
I think everybody's touchable. Did you remember Brian Cashman's answer at the trade deadline about that? He had one of the great lines of all time.
Right. He did mention something.
I don't know if you have this in the archives, Tommy. This was from, like, late July. And you, honestly, Rosie could have put it in. And one thing I learned about Paul Rosenberg, he labels things in the most bizarre ways. So he would probably label it Brian Cashman touching things.
Right.
But, which is weird. I'm serious. Because Brian Cashman was asked that question, and his answer was, well, some guys are less touchable than others.
Mm.
Which is, I don't know why it makes me laugh, but it's obviously true.
Definitely awkward.
And I did mention this earlier, but I'm going to re-bring it up for whoever is new to the audience now at this point. The injury misdiagnosed stuff. You already mentioned that the Volpe situation you didn't think was hindering him. Now he got surgery. We talked about Mark Leiter. You let him pitch with a fracture in his kneecap. We talked about Anthony Rizzo a couple of years ago and Clark Schmidt with the forearm stuff early in the year.
Like, absolutely.
There's a trend here that needs to be asked. Why does this keep happening to the Yankees?
100%. You got to pepper him with that. And speaking of untouchable, I did give this thought. So yesterday on the program, we were talking about Tarik Skubal. Mm-hmm. Tiki made it clear after listening to the head of the Tigers, they're not trading him. And then we started daydreaming about Paul Skeens. And naturally that the Pirates would ask for a lot. I think we have to just be clear and honest with ourselves. The Mets have to include Nolan McLean in that trade. You do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Yankees have to include Cam Schlittler in that trade, you do it. You're not talking about a guy who's a free agent in a year. You're talking about a proven stud who's amazing. So you do it. Anyhow, here's Brian Cashman talking about touching stuff.
Separately, do you feel like you have any prospects that are untouchable, as they would say, going into this trade deadline, people, players that you bank on?
Some less touchable than others. How about that? You're going to have to just...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jorge and DJ.
You know how proud Brian is with that line?
I know.
You can almost hear him being like...
than others. I'm sorry. However it works.
Oh, that's right. He repeated it. That was it. He whips out the line, and then he lets it... How about that? And then he comes back like a few seconds later and is like, how about that line?
Right.
Less touchable than others. So,
I'm not creepy at all.
No, not at all. So you is that good enough answer for you, Sean?
Yeah, he's going to have to reiterate it because he's talking about prospects there. I want to know about the young guys we've seen now.
Look, I think the answer is it depends on the player.
Well, okay, which is the right answer, but it's still worth asking.
Paul Skeens, no one should be untouchable. Do we not all agree on that?
I agree.
No one should be untouchable.
I agree. He's great. Agree. He's going to be, and probably consistently, one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yes.
So if you can acquire him in any capacity, you do that.
I think when you're talking about a guy who's a little bit older and closer to free agency, there are lines in the sand. Like, I would not include Nolan McLean or, in your case, Cam Schlittler in a deal for Tarik Skubal. 1,000%. He's only got one more year of control. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about someone like Skeens, who's so young, like, your dream is that Schlittler and McLean become half as good as Paul Skeens.
Right, and Skubal, you're not going to get traded for. Well, maybe you will, because maybe. But I don't think they are. We listened to it yesterday.
But the point is, he only has a year left of control
exactly.
Anyway.
So it's
not worth it.
It's creating... It's getting him now, and he could be great for you, but you have a major issue next year.
Well, and also remember—
Because he's definitely going to free agency.
100%. And remember when we talked about Soto 2 years ago? I don't know if you guys remember—
Same situation.
Well, I was adamant that the Mets should not trade for him. I was like, this is—and I argued with Mets fans. Like, why wouldn't you trade for Soto? And my answer was, I'm not giving up a million pieces for a guy I can sign a year from now.
You're right.
Now, little did I know that they actually would sign him a year from now, and they didn't have to give anything up. So I think when you talk about a guy who's that close to free agency, you have to give that thought. Paul Skeens is nowhere close to free agency.
No.
So you basically say, you tell me what you want.
Yeah, I think Libby Dunn's going to want the suite they wouldn't give Soto.
And guess what? You're going to give it to her.
Definitely.
Say, wow. So you'd give the suite up for Libby and Skeens, but not Soto.
Well, I would have given up the Soto, but I think you learned your lesson now. Libby gets a suite. Period.
Okay. Mm. Wow. What a hypocrite showing it.
Yeah. No, I
just buy one.
Well,
you told Juan Soto, just buy one.
Just purchase
and
it.
And now, because Livy Dunn did some TikTok videos you like, you're just like, take the suite? Come on. Mm. What's wrong with you?
Look, if the Yankees are going to lose bad games in October, and I could get a camera shot of Livy Dunn eating, you know, that slice of pizza up in the suite.
God. You come across like a creep right now, Sean.
You know what?
I'm just kidding. Whatever.
Not the first of the list.
Let's get back to your calls. 888-808-1019. Pete's in New Jersey. Hey, Pete.
Hey, how are you guys doing? First time in a long time.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tiki, for all your work with the Giants.
Thank you, bro. It was great.
I was thinking, I was watching the Yankees, especially against the Toronto series. They have to get back to doing the little things, the little ball with the young guys like Volpe. Stop trying to go for the fences. Put the ball opposite way, get on base, and the pitchers have to pitch inside. It's crazy. They seem like they didn't want to play the hard ball the way baseball is, old school, and they just wanted to try and do new stuff. It's terrible.
I'm glad you said that because I respectfully disagree with you and like 97% of the audience. Why are the L.A. Dodgers two wins away from the World Series?
Because their pitching has been phenomenal.
That is a part of it. But my broader statement you'll also agree with. Because they're that much better than everybody else.
Right, and they spent the money to be that much better than everybody else.
Absolutely. It's not because they play little ball. It's not because they make contact. Mm-hmm. It's because they're better than you, and we all know it.
And they could survive their MVP not hitting in the playoffs ever.
Aren't they?
They are.
Because
Ohtani's been bad. I mean, he had a hit yesterday, but...
He's like two for his last 30, but the point is they're better than you.
But and he also turns around and picks up the ball and throws three scoreless innings.
No, look, he's
so it's different.
He's a unicorn, and it's not about picking on Ohtani. It's more that we get caught in the who's winning, how are they winning, we have to do that. The Texas Rangers won differently than the Dodgers won last year, mm-hmm. who are winning differently than the Dodgers this year. It's just about being better. Like, no one hit outside of Aaron Judge. No one hit.
That's true.
Is that because they don't make contact and they didn't play little ball, or is it because everyone sucked? Max Fried was awful in his second start.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon was awful in his second start. The Yankee bullpen, not very good. Like, I think sometimes we get so like analytical on trying to figure out why things aren't working mm-hmm. when we just got to dumb it down. They got to be better.
Just pitch
better
and,
players.
Pitch and hit. Better players who can pitch and hit on a consistent basis.
Absolutely.
Now, the Dodgers are, unfortunately, that one team that has spent the money so that it feels like they have the switch guys.
Well, I'll say this about the Dodgers. In fact, I'll say it when we come back. The L.A. Dodgers can win the World Series this year, and they can win the World Series next year. And trust me, Sean, you're going to like where I'm going with this. They will never be the dynastic Yankees. And I'll tell you why. They can win every year for the next 7 years. They will never be the dynastic Yankees. And I don't even like the dynastic Yankees, but I call like it is. And I'll tell you why when we'll come back. Plus more of your calls at 888-808-1019. Hopefully we never use it. It's one of those things I do want you to write down, but hopefully we never use it. I heard Gio say this morning. I heard BT and Sal say it as well. They're going to be wrong about something. But again, hopefully we never find out. Kai Correa, the new bench coach of the New York Mets, the assumption is he'll come in, and if Mendy's fired, he will replace Carlos Mendoza. Not going to happen. If Mendy loses his job, I don't think it will be Kai Correa.
Why do you say that?
Because I think... Do you want me to give you names?
No, I'm just saying, like, that. Why would you
assume He was hired for that reason. Like, he's a good, young, possible future managerial candidate. I think if they go in season, they're either going to go with a guy in the front office who's managed before, a guy like Andy Green.
Okay.
Or I think they would go to Beltran. Like, I don't think that's crazy. I don't think it would be Kai Correa. So just a long-term prediction. I believe that they will be wrong. Now, I also hope we never find out because it means Mendy got fired. So I hope this is one of those things we never check back in on, because why are we checking in on a guy that never replaced Mendy? But look, I felt the same way. Like, ooh, if they bring in an experienced bench coach, that will be the guy to replace Carlos Mendoza. But once I saw the route that they went, and looking into who they have in their front office, I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't believe Kai Correa is going to be the next manager of the New York Mets. I believe if they fired Mendy internally, it would either be Andy Green, who managed in San Diego and is in the front office and they like him, or I think they would actually do Beltran, who has great respect to the players. I think it'd be one of those two guys. Now, you can imagine what the fan base would prefer, but I'm just telling you, just my honest opinion, I don't think Kai Correa was hired as the replacement for Mendy if things went bad.
Also, would
write that down.
I'm going to write it down. Would you also assume then they hire a guy like Correa as the bench coach, thinking there's zero shot we're going to be in position to fire Mendy midway through the season?
No, I think they really like him. I think that they want to improve their defense. We heard David Stearns talk about run prevention, and he's got a great reputation for what he did in Cleveland and I think wherever else he was, San Francisco, I forget. I got to do more research before I do my Rico. But I think they like him, but no, I don't think that was about replacing him. I think if they replace Carlos Mendoza, it's going to come from one of the two guys I mentioned. Or maybe somebody I'm not thinking of, but in the organization, just not him. So write that down, and let's hope we throw it away and we never see it again. Now, let me address the freaking Dodgers. Now, I say this as somebody that has no love loss for the 90s Yankees. The Yankee dynasty was built organically. It was built on producing and creating players like Bernie Williams, homegrown. Like Derek Jeter, homegrown. Like trading in a keen trade for a failed player in Paul O'Neill who blossomed in pinstripes. It was built on developing Andy Pettitte. That's how the Yankees were built. They were built on developing Mariano Rivera. Now, I ask you, who the hell have the Dodgers produced? They bought Mookie Betts. They bought Freddie Freeman. They bought Shohei Ohtani. They bought Yamamoto. They bought Blake Snell. They bought Tyler Glasnow after trading for him. Like, oh, Will Smith. Oh, you got me on that. Max Muncy. Hoo-hoo. They are a bought empire.
Freeman.
I just said Freddie Freeman.
I think you skipped him.
Okay. Freddie Freeman again. And let me make this clear. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, God bless him. The Dodgers are the evil empire, like Tiki said. They are a bought and sold product. And they can go win 9 championships, and that's great for them. I am not dismissing them. I'm saying you can never, ever, ever compare yourself to the dynastic New York Yankees. And here's the hypocrisy of everybody who just doesn't want to be fair. And I'm only being fair because I can't stand the dynastic Yankees. Why were they so evil? Because they added to their core. The Dodgers created their core by the bully of their wallet. The Yankees did not create their core because of the bully of their wallet. They created their core because Gene Michael was better than all of you. So do not hit me with the Dodgers or the Yankees. They could never dream of being the dynastic New York Yankees. Again, not
even
taking anything away
winning,
from them. No, they're a bought and sold product.
Yeah, but that's today's sports environment.
They're not
right?
The Yankees.
Of course they're not the
that's
Yankees.
That's all I'm saying.
But they'll be the Dodgers.
Good for them. They're not the Yankees.
They'll be the private equity way of going about winning a championship.
Good for them. I'm not disputing that.
A lot of people are doing that. It's actually what sports is right now.
That's fine.
It's what you don't care about this, but I do. It's what Liverpool is doing.
That's good for them.
They spent, I don't know, $500 million in the transfer window. Cheek, or something
I'm
like
not
that.
Begrudging them. I hope the Mets do it. They're not the Yankees. Hmm. I am just making it very, very clear that the dynastic New York Yankees were not created anywhere like the lab experiment that is the LA Dodgers. And I'm not, I know it sounds like I'm besmirching them. I'm not. Like, I want the Mets to do that.
You're just making a statement?
I am making a statement standing up for my own city, even though I can't stand the dynastic Yankees. They are not the Dodgers. Derek Jeter wasn't created in a lab. Mariano Rivera wasn't created in a lab.
Right, they were homegrown.
They were a homegrown unit that, yes, George would add to.
Yeah, but does that work anymore?
Yeah, I think so.
Who's done that recently?
I think the Houston Astros did that pretty damn well.
Yeah. It's a good one.
I got him.
I was trying to think who else.
And look, the Astros never got to a dynasty. I know Sean and I had that argument a year ago or 2 years ago. Like, they were on the verge of it. I was wrong. They never got there. They were close.
Because they broke up. Right?
Well, they failed. They didn't win enough. Like, I thought losing the 2019 World Series was a killer, blowing the ALCS to the Rangers in 23. Like, if they got to the World Series in 23, which would have been 3 consecutive World Series appearances and 5 in 7 years, yeah, you're a dynasty.
Right, you start to feel like the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think they just fell a little bit short. But again, it's not to take anything away from the Dodgers. They are wonderful, and the way you describe them, private equity, good for them. It's just, I want this to be crystal clear so we all understand it. Because there's a lot of hate in people's eyes. People hate the Yankees. And I'm going to raise my hand. I hated them too in the 90s. But I can be fair. And when I clear my eyes and clear my hatred, it is insulting for anyone to suggest that these corporate Dodgers are anything like the dynastic New York Yankees. They are not.
Yeah, because the money's different.
Yeah, and it was built differently.
This isn't one man's money.
It was built.
This is private equity money.
But it was also built differently.
Of course. It was built with a great farm system, and then when you needed to accent, you had the resources to accent.
That's not how the Dodgers were built.
Of course not.
That's how the Yankees were built.
You know my philosophy here. Anytime there's a Japanese player posted, he's going to the Dodgers.
You're right. Again, good for them. You're not the Yankees. Sean, are you proud of me right now?
I am very proud of you. Sticking up for Big Brother.
Sticking up for the old evil empire. But they're not the
old evil empire.
And that's the other thing, just to circle it now back to you, to the evil empire.
Mm-hmm.
This is the evil empire.
100%.
A bunch of corporate bastards who buy everybody they want and then beat you and laugh about it and do their little wave. They are the evil empire. The Yankees were a well-oiled machine that added to their empire with wealth. The Dodgers built their empire on money. That's not how the Yankees were built. So, in the other breath, the Dodgers are the pure definition of evil. The Yankees were just effing good.
Yeah.
They're evil because they're winning World Series on money that won't be spent till 2040.
That too. I left that part out.
Right. That's what's kind of frustrating.
No, and I get that. That doesn't even bother me.
Well, who can do that, though?
Anybody can.
Who wants to do that?
I don't know.
Who other than a private equity company can say, you know what? We're going to hold this liability on our books for 20 years.
Right.
It's just, like, who wants to do that?
No, I got you.
It's just not smart business.
I got you.
But the Dodgers can because it's just part of a portfolio.
So with all that said, let's go Mariners. Knock these bastards off. Now, let's get back to your calls. 888-808-1019, the number. Let's go to Zach in Paramus. Hey, Zach.
What's going on, Evan? TK, how you guys doing?
We're good, man.
What's up?
So I heard you guys talk about trading for Steens, giving away McLean or Schlittler. But I have a better idea in the theory. You wait till Steens is a free agent, and they always say, happy wife, happy life. Well, Livy Dunn lives 30 minutes from Yankee Stadium, an hour from Citi Field. It's guaranteed he's coming to New York. You don't even need anything.
The problem with what you're saying is that you literally have to wait like 6 years. Who wants to do that?
Yeah, nobody.
And by the way, when he eventually gets to free agency, which will be 2030, he's older.
Yeah.
He may be on the down spurt. The reason why you want him now is that he's a 23-year-old stud who is only going to get better in theory. Even if he got hurt, like, right. You still have so many more years of him. So the waiting to free agency thing, which normally I'd be good for, 2030.
Yeah.
I mean, who's president in 2030?
The Rock. Idea.
Who?
The Rock.
Oh.
Sports Talk on WFAN is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
Mario in Long Beach. Hey, Mario.
Well, hey, what's going on, Ev? How you doing? Give me a second.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
An hour 35 on hold. I got two quick things for you, and then I'll listen to your response. Number one is, I find it kind of interesting when everybody's beating up on Volpe, when nobody's mentioning the second he got that cortisone shot, he started to play better.
That's what about the playoffs?
Playoffs? How did he feel in the playoffs?
I know, but how did he hit in the playoffs? He literally struck out almost every at-bat.
He's still... Right, but I'm just saying how when he got that shot, he played better. Let me give you my second point before you cut me off, please. Second thing is, you said Bateman was one of the guys, I think you said, for the receivers for the Giants. No way in hell, and let me tell you why. Because Lamar's coming back on Sunday. Believe it or not, at 1-5, do you know what their odds are to make the playoffs?
What?
Yes. Betting odds.
25%.
I mean, yeah, I'd say even higher just because the division still stinks. So I think they still have time to fix it.
How about I looked at six sites between plus 105 and plus 120.
That's amazing.
Let me finish. Yeah, yes. Let me finish.
All right.
Bateman had 45 catches for 750 yards last year.
Yeah.
16.3 yards per catch, 9 touchdowns. There's no way in hell they're trading that guy. Thanks for taking my call.
Mario was very snippy today. It was like, you know what? You made me wait a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get all my points in.
Right.
Yeah, no, he's right about a few things. Number one, when I put Rashad Bateman on my list, it was thought. Like, hey, would the Ravens do this?
That would be their conceding.
That would be them conceding. But he's right about the odd stuff. So if you go to the FanDuel Sportsbook app right now, to win the division, and they're 1-5, they are slight underdogs. Not big underdogs.
They're 1-4. 1-5.
Plus 175 to win the division. The Steelers are minus 160. What does that tell you?
So that means they got to go on basically a 90% win clip.
Yeah. I mean, they're capable of it. Let me look at their schedule.
With Lamar, you can beat anybody.
So here's their schedule out of the bye. Home Chicago. At Miami.
That's a winnable game. Winnable game.
At Minnesota.
Winnable game.
At Cleveland.
Winnable game.
Home Jets.
Winnable game.
Home Bengals.
Winnable game.
Home Pittsburgh.
Winnable maybe.
Well, you better if you're going to win the division.
Right, right.
At
but winnable maybe. That's just one of the remaining.
At Cincinnati.
Winnable.
Home New England.
Winnable maybe.
And here's the tough part. The final 2 weeks are very tough. At Green Bay.
Yeah.
At Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So it's, I found, and you know what? It might come down to the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah. They could they could very well be 8-5.
Yeah.
They could definitely rattle off the next
seven. There's three more, maybe two more losses.
Yeah. So I brought up Rashad Bateman yesterday when I made my list of receivers, and the thought I went through is I really focused on AFC teams, thinking they would be more open to making a trade. And I tried to find teams that are clearly out of it or could be out of it. Obviously, the Ravens are in that could-be section, and a lot of that depends on the health of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
I don't think they're giving up, but they're a team to keep an eye on, especially if coming out of the bye, they lose at home to Chicago. They lose that game and they're 1-6. I mean, I don't know.
The problem is it's not just Lamar Jackson coming back. Their defense has so many injuries and stinks, too.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
It kills them.
It's more than one thing. Let's go to Tom in Riverhead. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Evan and Zeke, thanks for taking the call.
What's up, man?
I have a piece for Pete Alonso. I just want to go back to the caller a while back. I watch every game. I go to about 10 to 15 games a year. Pete's defense has really improved, and I think with his scooping ability, he has made a lot of those infielders have stats that look a lot better because he's saving those guys.
That's a tough one to measure. Yeah. I've always said he's a great scooper. Now, the Mets purposely throw a lot of balls in the dirt, specifically Lindor, almost as a strategy. So those scooping numbers could be a little out of kind of out of focus. But does that make him and does that over kind of compensate for his bad throwing? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's really an eye test thing with Pete. And to me, I've always looked at him as an average to slightly below average defender.
Yeah, when I think
he's
about,
bad. I don't think he's great.
The throwing issues, there's only a couple that come to mind, but I think the couple is enough, you know? And I think that's where people, when they talk about the eye test, statistically it is what it is. That's what stats are going to tell you. Sometimes they lie to you, but the eye test, you hear that you remember those couple of vivid ones and you can't get over them.
Especially the Senga one, because it turned out to be one of the biggest moments of the season. EJ on Long Island. What's up, EJ?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Just one point as far as I don't understand why it would be Mendy on the hot seat, because basically I lay the failure of the Mets at Stern. First of all, his philosophy of going after, like, reclamation project pitchers, you know, especially after he was short of starting pitchers at the start of the season, didn't make sense at all. And then he's got an exhausted bullpen that he tried to bolster. And by the time he did that, the other pitchers in the bullpen were exhausted.
EJ, it's all fair. It's baseball, bro. They had an epic kind of collapse for 3 months.
Yeah.
And the first peoples that are in trouble are coaches. Well, they're all gone.
Right, because, well, you can't fire all the players.
Right.
And a lot of them are under contract, so it doesn't make sense to do
And they'll make some moves with the players.
Yes.
But I would compare this to Willie. And Willie Randolph in 2005, his first year, great progress after a bad start. Good year. 2006, look, they were the best team in the National League. We all know what happened at the very end. There were some moves I disagreed with. I don't think anyone blames Willie Randolph for what happened in the NLCS. And then 2007 was a collapse.
Right.
Was the collapse Willie Randolph's fault? I remember watching that collapse. It was not Willie Randolph's fault, but they collapsed.
Somebody has to be the scapegoat.
And guess what happened the following year when they were right around 500?
Right.
He got fired.
It felt like it was an extension of the season before. Thank you, SNY, for joining us. As always, Baseball Night in New York coming up next, brought to you by the Tri-State Cadillac Dealers.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly
you know
what people
why it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.